The only raises we're getting is in the price.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. The economic numbers out this morning suggest two things I'm sure you already know. Our incomes aren't going up, but prices are. In June, personal incomes had their smallest increase in more than a year. Consumer inflation climbed 0.8%, the most since February 1981. That's going to be a big concern for the Federal Reserve. The Fed meets tomorrow to make a decision about its key interest rate. More from Jeremy Hobson.
Fed watchers expect the federal funds rate to stay at 2%. Former Fed Governor Lyle Gramley, now at the Stanford Group, says any hike in rates to stave off inflation would scare the markets and hurt economic growth.
If you thought a person had a pimple on his forehead and a big dose of chemotherapy would cure it, but it might kill him, what would you do?
So he says keeping rates steady is likely. Princeton economist Alan Blinder agrees, but he says the Fed is far from hamstrung.
As we know, the Fed is doing lots of other things to try to shore up the financial system with lending facilities of all kinds. They're doing quite a lot.
If the rate does stay at 2% tomorrow, it will have been there since April. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Wall Street was all over the place last week, up 200 points one day, down 200 the next. The indexes wound up in about the same place they started, though. Some losses in the early going this morning. The Dow is down 60 points to 11,266. The NASDAQ has fallen 14, and the S&P 500 has dropped 7. 1 to 2% losses in Asia today by the close. European shares are mixed so far. Another thing the Fed's been up to is looking at credit cards. It wants to impose some new rules on credit card companies, and today's the last day for public comment on those rules. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
If you're like me, you receive a lot of promotional offers for credit cards. Many of them come with low introductory interest rates, but those rates could adjust higher. And for cardholders who don't pay off their balances each month, banks have a lot of discretion on how to apply payments. If you pay slightly more than the minimum, banks can apply the extra money, surprise, to the portion of the balance at the lower rates. That means a fatter balance at a higher rate. That's just one thing the new rules would change. You would also have more time to pay your bill. Moody'sEconomy.com chief economist Mark Zandi likes the Fed's proposal.
It's oftentimes a mystery to us how we get charged the interest rates that we do and the fees that we have to pay. And this is an effort to make that all clearer to us.
Lenders don't like the Fed's rules. They say they're still hurting from the subprime crisis. But Zandi says lenders should quit while they're ahead because Congress is considering more draconian legislation. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Some investors at GE have been urging the company to sell NBC Universal after the Beijing Olympics. But today, GE's chief marketing officer said it's not going to happen. GE has generated $1.7 billion in revenues from the Olympics so far. That's three times what it predicted last year. NBC begins its Olympic broadcast Friday with the opening ceremonies. This is the Morning Report for Monday, August 4th on Marketplace.org. For a while, it looked like we'd see 100 years of Vioxx trials. But last year, drug company Merck settled most of the lawsuits over the painkiller for $4.8 billion. This week, that money starts making its way to the victims. Dan Gretsch reports.
More than 97% of people who sued Merck agreed to the settlement. That's nearly 50,000 people. Individual payouts will range from $5,000 to several million dollars. Still, many claimants say it's not enough. Al Pennington is a retired TV broadcaster who had a heart attack after taking Vioxx.
When they see that $4.85 billion figure, the public thinks, wow, those people are going to be rich, but then the lawyer takes 35 to 40%. The plaintiff is left with very little.
Pennington says his check will barely cover the prescription drugs he now takes for his weakened heart. Claimants will start receiving their checks in a few weeks. That doesn't mean Merck's troubles are over. The company still faces hundreds of potential lawsuits. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
In these economic times, it might behoove some companies to work together. The Detroit News said today that GM and Ford are considering a partnership. They would develop engines together as a way to cut costs. And British Airways said it's working on an alliance with American Airlines. More on that from Stephen Beard in London.
This is not a marriage, just a deeper relationship. BA and American are already partners in the One World Alliance. At a time of crisis in the airline industry, they want to huddle closer together. They want to cut costs, coordinating flights and fares, perhaps running a joint frequent flyer program. The two airlines feel at a disadvantage. Lufthansa and Air France both operate very closely with US carriers. BA and American need to be allowed to do the same, says Tim Coombs of Aviation Economics.
They are handicapped to a certain extent in being able to compete. So it would be an important, good, strong step forward for both carriers.
BA and American have tried this before but failed to win the support of regulators. This time they believe they'll succeed because the Open Skies Agreement has opened up competition in transatlantic air travel. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Just about every industry is struggling right now, but newspapers have been having a tough time for years. Except what are called ethnic newspapers, foreign language publications here in the U.S. There are new ones sprouting up every day in places like Southern California. We have this story from Rob Schmitz.
At a popular cafe in Orange County's Little Saigon neighborhood, Ngoc Tran and his friends smoke cigarettes and discuss the news from four different newspapers, all published here in this neighborhood.
Even with the people that have enough language to read the American newspaper, but we still favor the Vietnamese newspaper.
Little Saigon, population 150,000, has at least 43 local newspapers and news magazines, and that number is growing. More Hispanic consumers in the U.S. are also reading ethnic papers.
I think the tremors that are going through mainstream newspapers, you're not seeing that in ethnic print media.
Sandy Close is director of New America Media, an association of more than 700 ethnic media organizations.
And to the extent now everything that seems to have a return on investment in media has to be hyper-local, they are already there.
Close's organization has found the ethnic media reaches 51 million Americans. She says big advertisers are pulling ads out of mainstream newspapers, but not out of local foreign language newspapers. But that doesn't mean ethnic publishers are flush with cash. The budget for Truc Kinh Ly's monthly magazine, Van Hoa, is so tight, he's forced to wear many a hat.
I am the publisher. I am the editor-in-chief. I am the photographer. I am the reporter. I am the writer. And I am the delivery.
Lee takes most of his photos, but when he needs extras, he just takes them off the internet. I'm not afraid of being sued, he says in Vietnamese. I spent 8 years of hell in a Vietnamese prison camp. Nothing can faze me.
This is a layout computer.
After managing a restaurant until 9 in the evening, he comes straight to his office to work on the magazine. He gives me a tour of his office. There's a layout computer, a printer, and a bed.
You sleep here? This is, you sleep in your office?
Yeah.
On this night, he does not return home. The news, he says, never sleeps. In Little Saigon, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Time for the Sloan Sessions.
Last week, the Bush administration said the next White House will inherit a $500 billion budget deficit. That would be a record. But Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan says that's really not even close to the actual deficit.
Well, the number the Bush people have put out is $482 billion, and people are going, or however you inhale, but the real number is significantly higher than that, the real deficit. In fact, it probably closes in on $900 billion, but it's only money, and who's counting?
Well, what would people say if it was $900 billion?
Well, they'd say, my God, it's 6% of the gross domestic product. This is the number back in the 80s in the early Reagan years that shocked everybody and got Congress and Reagan and all of these people to put in a very large tax increase. Mm-hmm. And now we're approaching that number, and nobody seems to realize it other than me and one or two other people who are considered cranks, like Senator Conrad of North Dakota.
Okay, so explain how you come up with $900 billion versus the $482 billion.
All right, it's Washington math. So we start with 482, the stated number. We then add back $182 billion, which is the Social Security surplus, which reduces the stated deficit. But in theory, this money is being set aside for you and me when we get to be old and even crankier than we are, which makes it 664. Then the government pays interest on its own securities to itself and its own trust funds, and that's about another $100 billion. Then there's 50-something billion dollars for loans and loan guarantees. So you do all of this, and you end up with Senator Conrad's number, which is 815. But he's being way too nice and way too conservative.
So, Alan, what do you propose we do about this?
Well, I propose, for starters, that people in our profession, yours and mine, decide to use the real number instead of the stated number. People might actually listen, but right now there's no pressure on the White House, whoever happens to be in the White House, to care about this. The people from Congress, for the most part, go their own way because there's nobody really in charge of the whole big financial picture. Maybe this will change with the next administration, but I sure wouldn't want to bet on it.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thank you.
You're welcome, Scott.
Feel free to share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Chagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.